This is Day to Day from NPR News. I'm Madeline Brand. The New York Review of Books called the book In Cold Blood the best documentary account of an American crime ever written. In Cold Blood transformed journalism, ushering in a new style, the nonfiction novel. Its author, Truman Capote.
Yeah, I've decided on a title for my book. I think you'll like it. It's very masculine. It's In Cold Blood.
That's actor Philip Seymour Hoffman as Truman Capote in a new movie out this week called Capote. Hoffman's done more than just transform his husky baritone into the shrill, childlike voice that Capote was so well known for. In order to embody Capote, Hoffman says he had to start with Capote's troubled childhood.
What makes him tick has a lot to do with that. 7-year-old who looked forward to his father coming back, and he'd come back for like a day and then leave again. That 12-year-old that was brought to New York City to live with his mother, and his mother used to openly make fun of him about his homosexuality to his teenage years in front of people. Those are the things you need to look at, because there's some kind of thing that's driving this man that's not driving others.
The film focuses on the chapter in Truman Capote's life that turned him into one of America's most famous authors, when he wrote In Cold Blood. It begins in 1959, when Capote reads an article in the New York Times about the murder of a Kansas farm family. He convinces the New Yorker magazine to send him to Kansas to write about it.
Here he was, a writer of some renown in New York,
yeah.
And he decides to go out to rural Kansas, a place who's never heard of him. And he sort of drops in and I imagine received like an alien. He had this sort of fey mannerisms and that voice, that childlike.
Yeah, he has that very odd way of speaking. And he was very small, man, a diminutive man. He was much smaller than I. The kind of dirty blonde hair and the soft features. I mean, there was just something about him that just was vastly different, the way he dressed and how that someone like him was ingratiating himself into so many circles was kind of his talent. I got this vibe, this feeling that he had a way of meeting somebody in a very short period of time, understanding what it was he needed to do in order to win this person's trust, to let them know that it's okay to speak openly with him. And he also had a way of telling a story that kept you captive, and that had something to do with his voice and his rhythms and also the way he just was, I think, a deep-feeling guy at the end of the day. And so you saw this certain raw vulnerability inside him.
How did you do the voice? How did you study the voice, practice the voice? How did you get it just right?
Well, first of all, I don't think it's just right. I mean, because I didn't worry about having it be just right. I knew that it had to be true, which sounds kind of corny, but I knew it had to be honest, and then I knew it had to express the vitality and the nuances of Truman Capote. But ultimately, you know, no one can just that, because that's kind of a mimic thing, and that thing isn't as interesting.
I wanted to ask if you let me look at your investigation notes.
That lawyer you helped find for your friends got them a hearing at the Kansas Supreme Court.
Yeah, I heard this morning. Alvin, I mean, do you not want me to look at your notes? You are permitted to say no.
It is a bit mysterious at the end of the day how it all comes together. And I think it's really diligence and hard work, just like any other art form too. You know, you can do the research, you can read everything you need to read, you can talk to the people you can talk to illuminate things to you, you can get, you know, videotapes, audio tapes, all those things. And I had all those things at my disposal, and I would have all those things, and I'd be alone in a room. And I would force myself to be alone in that room with those things for an hour or two every day.
The central question in the movie, the central moral question that Truman Capote faces is he has an opportunity to help these murderers that he's become friends with get a lawyer, do their appeals, and he really doesn't want to because it means he can't finish his book. And the finishing of his book, the end of his book, is their execution.
This is what we've been waiting for, the state of execution to make a federal appeal, all thanks to you.
This is absurd. Do you know what absurd means? I'm ready. I have a plane to catch.
Please don't go out there.
Hey, this is my work, Perry. I'm working. And when you want to tell me what I need to hear, it's you let me know.
The actions he has to take to create a relationship with this person, Perry Smith, and others.
Perry Smith being...
Perry Smith being the one of the two killers, or the other killer being Dick Hickok. Dick Hickok was a much more open person, so it was easier to get close to him. Where Perry wasn't that, it wasn't the case, and he had to work much harder, and therefore became much closer to Perry. And I think there was a strong identification they had with each other of adults that dealt with abandonment as children and these issues of being orphans and stuff. And through that, you know, you're trying to get close to somebody and find out as much as you can about somebody. The byproduct of that is you become intimate with that person. It's impossible not to.
And he has a great line in the movie. He's talking about himself and Perry and how similar they are. And he says,
"It's as if Perry and I grew up in the same house. And one day, he stood up and went out the back door, while I went out the front."
As children, they were abandoned. And they both had artistic aspirations, because you kind of see in the film slightly, you get a glimpse in the fact that Perry liked to draw, he liked to write, and there's these things that you could see that he also had. And so I think Truman basically was saying there was a huge amount of empathy he had toward Perry Smith that came from those two things.
Tell us about the end, because that's when he witnesses the execution that he had wanted so he could finish his book.
My assumption about it is I think he wanted to project to everyone that, you know, I'm not emotionally connected here. This is my book. I did it, and they need to die, and they should die, and I have helped them, and I don't need to help them anymore. And I think it was a complicated thing, but I think it was a certain kind of strength that he was kind of projecting. And there's lots of stories about him, you know, expressing his happiness about the fact that their appeals didn't go through and things like that. And I always wonder about that. Like, why did he do that in front of people, you know, clap his hand and jump in the air about the fact that they're now going to be executed at a party or something? The end is what you're seeing is that thing that he, you know, that ambition and that need to be accepted and loved by as many people as possible through the success of this book and the celebrity and the fame and the money that it would bring him and all these things. But the thing underlying it, the thing that that is really driving it, is this grief, that is unbearable grief, and that he was going to feel when they were gone, and then when Perry was gone, that he once again would be abandoned. That watching Perry Smith die was going to be excruciatingly painful and deal with a lot of grief. And that coupled with his ambition and his need for this book to be there. You know, those two things were so conflicting. They were, you know, like the plus and negative of a magnet. They just would not go together. And there they were existing inside him at the same time. I think it was something that was unbearable in that moment. And that's where you lead up to the ending, where he's at a loss for what to say. And I do think that the end of this movie, you really see everything leading up, and then you see at the end the damage. You know, you start to see, how does somebody after this event really move on? And I think hopefully the film succeeds in showing why he became something else, why whoever he was before, he's not going to be now.
Well, Philip Seymour Hoffman, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Actor Philip Seymour Hoffman stars in the new movie Capote, which opens on Friday.